Welcome to Food Talk. This is Conversations About Food in Our Local Area, produced by North Coast Food Web, where we work to cultivate healthy communities and a vibrant economy through food and agriculture. I'm Marianne. I'm here with Linda Perkins, and we are going to talk about cooking this morning.
Specifically, asparagus. And I was trying so hard to come up with a clever name for this show. And this is pretty much why I don't have a lot of friends, because what I came up with is Astoria Gasparator. It didn't work.
It's in there somewhere.
Astoria Gus.
Well, we're celebrating asparagus because A, it's April. April. And also, it's starting to be everywhere because spring.
Boy, it's one of my favorite produce events of the year when the asparagus is fresh and cheap.
Do you grow it?
No. You know, I'm from Minnesota, and it grows wild there, which is amazing that it can live through that winter. And so as a child, I did pick it wild. But no, you know, a lot of people who cook, and I cook, their secondary hobby or maybe their primary hobby is gardening. But I would describe my gardening style as somewhere between freewheeling weed patch and abandoned homestead. So I am not gifted that way.
Oh, no. Either one of those could be a really great magazine.
Abandoned homestead.
I volunteer my whole entire piece of property. Well, I'm with you. I think I've even written food columns about the fact that I'm not, you know, I love clams. I'm not going to dig them. I'm not going to grow it. I'm not going to hunt it down. If it shows up in my kitchen, I will absolutely cook it for you.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So, and growing asparagus is an exercise in patience because it takes a couple years before you get asparagus that you are really allowed to pick and eat. But we don't have to go out and shoot wild asparagus.
No,
we can have it. It's
you
fabulous.
Know, Dale, my husband, his son is an avid gardener and a gifted gardener, and he grows asparagus. And so I learned from him. I didn't know this. You know how, like, when you're in the store, it seems like the thing to buy would be that pencil thin asparagus. Oh, it looks so delicate and elegant and refined, and that's what you should buy. But that is actually when it's oldest. Asparagus, and you all probably know this, but we have half an hour to talk. Asparagus is a grass, and so it starts out thick and plump, and those are I think the tastiest ones. And then it gets thinner and thinner as it grows into the grass that it was supposed to become. And I didn't know that until I saw him grow it, and I thought that was really interesting.
Ooh, and you get so much more food out of the really plump, fabulous stalks. I mean, it's a shame to not use any of the asparagus. Yeah. We're going to talk about some ways to cook and eat asparagus, but I want to let people know that the recipes that we talk about today and lots more are available at northcoastfoodweb.org. And we are actually, now that we're starting to talk more about home cooking, since that seems to be what we know about and who we're talking to, we have set this new high bar for ourselves where the recipes are on the website before we even talk about them.
Yeah,
I know. Heretofore system has been those will be up soon, and then sometimes they are and sometimes they aren't, but they really are now.
Yeah, we call it homework.
Yeah, that's it.
Get cooking.
That's it. So tell me what you're going to do with asparagus most immediately.
The thing I do the most probably is just grill it as a side dish. And when I grill asparagus, you know, it's so cheap right now and it's so easy. You got the grill going, I'll grill probably 2 or 3 pounds of it at once. And then I've got it in the fridge for the week and I can make other things with it. Because pretty much anything that uses cooked asparagus, you can cook it anyway. You can steam it or boil it or roast it or grill it or saute it and then use it in whatever you're going to use. And I love the flavor of grilled asparagus. So when I grill a vegetable, I have just kind of an all-purpose method, and I put a little bit of olive oil in a Ziploc bag, and then like a tablespoon, and then I usually put some salt and pepper, and then maybe some herbs or garlic. I do like garlic on grilled vegetables. And then before I put the vegetables in the bag, I squish the olive oil around so it's all over the inner surface of the bag, and then I put the vegetables in there, and I just kind of roll them around in the bag when it's sealed. Does that make sense? So that the vegetable exterior gets covered in just the smallest layer, thinnest thinnest layer of oil so that it's not all drippy and goopy and it doesn't catch on fire. And then I just grill it on medium, and most vegetables are done in about 4 minutes.
And you're doing it on a grill, like a barbecue grill?
Yeah, and a lot of people have gas grills in their home, but out where I live, we don't have natural gas. And then I could start a big old charcoal fire, but I'm lazy. I just turn on the gas grill. That's what
there you
I do.
Go. Yeah.
But any way that you want to cook
You could
it.
Do it under a broiler in the oven, and that's how I do it at home because I'm not a griller.
Yeah.
But one of my very favorite ways. And I love having leftover asparagus.
Mm-hmm. And you can do anything with it. My friend Dawn asked me once, does your oven, and maybe your oven at home does, have a convection roast? Well, it does. My oven has regular bake and then convection bake, and that's what I'd always used, and I'd even forgotten about that button. But for some reason, if you have that button on your oven, that convection roast button, oh my gosh, vegetables, especially potatoes, but vegetables just turn out so much better. They get so much just darker on the outside, and they're just better. So if you have that button on your oven, try it with asparagus, try it with potatoes, try it with all your vegetables.
I want that button on my oven. I don't have it.
But maybe you have it. I didn't even know I had it.
Maybe I better read the book.
Yeah.
I am one of the things that I love with asparagus is eggs anyway.
Yeah.
I think asparagus and eggs are the best of friends.
Yeah.
And so to put them in a quiche, fabulous. To just chop them up in an omelet, fabulous. Leftover roast asparagus in an omelet, fabulous. Just steamed or roasted asparagus spear dipped in the yolk of like a soft boiled egg. Yipes.
So elegant.
So delicious.
I put a recipe up on the website from the New York Times. They had a recipe last week where they made a quiche, and you could just make any quiche that you normally make. That wasn't the part that was so good, but it was asparagus and roasted scallions. Now, I've grilled scallions, but I'd never roasted them in the oven, and there was just a really interesting, beautiful caramelized onion flavor that came out, and I really like that with asparagus in the quiche. And so that's why I put that recipe up, just so you could see the roasted scallion thing with the asparagus, because I thought that was really beautiful. I really, really liked it.
Mm. I love roasted onions, any kind. Also, when you snap the asparagus to take the tough ends off, I like to use those ends in soup. To make soup.
How do you do it, though?
Well, you can do it by just cooking the daylights out of them. They get soft but fibery, stringy. But then you can put them through a food mill.
And then you
get this. You still get a lot of the pulpy string stuff that you're going to put in the compost, but you get a lot of the fleshy soft stuff that comes out the bottom of your food mill.
Okay, because I read a recipe online that insisted that you could use those broken ends of the asparagus. It said save them up till you have enough soup, and my initial reaction was liar. But then I thought, oh no, I don't know that person. So I did it. It's that time of year where I have a lot of broken asparagus butts, that part that you snap off that's so fibrous. So I made the soup, and I didn't do that. What I did is I used an immersion blender.
Oh, sure.
And so I blended it with that, and then it was so embarrassing because the soup tasted good. Asparagus soup tastes good. We put a recipe up online. But when you were eating it, like every third bite, you'd saved enough fiber up in your mouth that you had to spit this little green-looking cat hairball out. And I thought, oh, I can't believe that person put that recipe up online. Oh. But then I thought, well, because sometimes people write recipes online and they're just putting words down and trying to be famous, But I thought, well, maybe this is a professional cook. Maybe they have a Vitamix blender, which is a really high-powered blender, and maybe that's how they're doing it. Well, I have a BlendTec, which is also a high-powered blender. I got that kind because it makes really good ice cream, and I can make non-dairy ice cream for my lactose-intolerant husband. So I put it in there, and I put it on the full soup cycle, which is 90 seconds, which is like 7 years in a regular blender.
Yes.
And I just blended the bejesus out of it. So I did that, and it came out, and it was like green hollandaise sauce. It was absolutely pureed.
Uh-huh.
And so I tried it, but still, it was like, it wasn't like sandy, but it was like there were little fish scales crunching in there just a little bit. And so then, of course, in my mind, it sealed it. Liar! But then Marianne just said that you can do it, and I never thought the food mill.
Well, the food mill, you end up with this little thin blanket of the stuff you don't want in your soup, and you have to scoop it out and put another batch in and grind it up. But you do get this really velvety puree with none of that stuff
in
it.
That's what I needed to do, and I didn't even think of it. I have one, but I didn't even think of it.
Well, that's the way I think if you're going to use those butts. And also, I think it's good to peel them just with a potato peeler and get the very thin outside layer, which is the, you know, usually
most of the fiber.
Yeah, and it's also the driest, you know, it's been, that's the part that's exposed. I like the inner, you know, the soft underbelly.
The soft underbelly. I used to work in a French restaurant, and I can say, and I believe with all my heart, that I have done my lifetime's allotment of asparagus peeling. And so it's
Are
so
you
funny.
Through?
It's just like I get that peeler out and I've got that spear, and it's just like a flashback. Can't do it. Can't do it.
Where did you work in a French restaurant?
Oh, in Minneapolis, a place that was owned by the Accor hotel chain, which is a big French hotel chain, and it was called Temps-Portant. And it was just a nice little bistro. I enjoyed it a lot. Learned a lot there. French kitchens are interesting because they're so hierarchical and just kind of, I don't know the word, but abusive, you know, but that yelling, screaming, abusive chef is just the norm in French cooking. And so that was kind of different.
Yeah, what fun, huh? Although I don't know, being sworn at in French, maybe, you know, maybe a little better. Well, I'm trying to think what else. Oh, in talking about eggs and asparagus, one of the things I love to do with leftover cooked asparagus is just an asparagus salad, the spears with a little vinaigrette drizzled over them and some chopped hard-boiled egg.
Yeah.
It's a really great salad, so pretty and so delicious.
Yeah. I like just a mix of greens with asparagus on top, a couple of walnuts, and then I put a recipe up for just a really Dijon-heavy vinaigrette, and I love the flavor of Dijon with asparagus, also and shallots. I just think that marriage is a beautiful one.
That was a really nice, I love that recipe for that vinaigrette. That would
really
be good
easy
on a whole lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I think on bitter greens and any kind of
my
like
left
that.
Arm. No.
Well, the other thing that's showing up like crazy right around this time of year is rhubarb.
Mm-hmm.
It's everywhere.
Yeah. And there's so many things you can do with it. I was looking this morning at the New York Times food site, and just this morning they put a rhubarb upside down cake, and I'd never thought of using rhubarb in an upside down cake. Have you done that?
I haven't, but I've been seeing recipes and talk about that a lot lately, just in things I'm reading. So I think I saw something in a Sunset magazine, so obviously it's a hot ticket right now, but I am tempted to try it. I love upside down cake.
It was beautiful. And I think the it was in a list of showy desserts, and it was. I feel like, I don't know, kind of weak or lame or ugh. Anyway, I almost always put strawberries with rhubarb. And I don't know if it's because I'm not as good as getting as much flavor out of the rhubarb as I should be, or if I'm just like a 12-year-old at heart and I'm going to eat macaroni and cheese afterwards. But I mean, it's so cliche, but I just love strawberry and rhubarb.
Well, they're perfect partners.
Yeah.
Absolutely
so
perfect.
So delicious.
I really just like rhubarb, lack of a better word, rhubarb sauce, like you would have applesauce.
Yeah.
I love that.
That's
and
really,
although
really
I'm
good.
Not really that interested in eating a bowl or a cup of applesauce, I totally would eat a dish of rhubarb sauce. It is so good.
Have you made it?
Yeah.
How do you make it? What do you do?
I just chop up the rhubarb and put it in a saucepan with some water and some sugar and just cook it until it's soft. Just like I make it exactly like I would make applesauce, only I don't put cinnamon in it.
Okay. Do you run it through a food mill? You don't, do you? You have chunks
No.
in there? Okay. And then have you found that it matters how small you cut the pieces?
Yeah,
all?
I really like it without big chunks in
it.
And so I'm cutting the pieces reasonably small, but I'm also just cooking it a really long time. Since you're not ever draining it, you're not losing anything out of it to just let it simmer until it completely is so soft that you can just like use a potato masher and not have any chunks left, or not chunks.
Okay.
You know, it's going to still have texture, but it's all really soft and delicious.
Now, do you put any cinnamon and anything like that in there?
I don't put anything in there except sugar, but, you know, I make a rhubarb cake. The recipe for that is up on the website. It that's wonderful, and I think it might have a pinch of cinnamon in it. It's really lovely, and it's a recipe I got out of the Albertina Kerr cookbook, which is Albertina Kerr is a Portland institution. I believe it was for, was an orphanage or something.
Oh, really?
But the foundation always did a cookbook for fundraisers, and I have an old one that was my mom's, and it's got this fabulous rhubarb cake in it. It actually has two, and I kind of put them together because I like the topping off of one and the cake off of another. And so the hybrid is on the website. I need to remind everybody quickly that you're listening to Coast Community Radio, KMUN 91.9 FM, Astoria, Oregon, KTCB 89.5 FM, Tillamook, Oregon. We're streaming live at coastradio.org, and we're in your pocket wherever you are on your mobile device using the TuneIn app. You're listening to Food Talk, and I'm Marianne Myers, and I'm here with... Our phone is ringing with Linda Perkins, and we're talking about springtime veg, rhubarb and asparagus.
All the tall and skinny things.
I know. You know, tomorrow I'm teaching a cooking class at the Food Web, and we're doing polenta, among other things, and it makes me think we should put soft-cooked egg and some roast asparagus on top of that. Yeah. That would be really good.
That would be extraordinary.
Yeah.
Hey, can you tell me what that rhubarb cake is like? Like, is it really dense? What is it like?
It is a yellow cake, but it is more, it is closer in texture to a pound cake than to a layer cake.
Okay, num.
Yeah, really. And it's not made as a layer cake. It's made in a single cake pan.
Okay.
And it has chopped rhubarb, not pre-cooked or anything.
Okay.
I always, the recipe, the hybrid that's on there is way more rhubarb than is recommended by the original recipe because, like raisins, I want to taste it in every bite. Mm-hmm. I don't want to occasionally be treated to a bite of rhubarb. So I think I almost doubled the amount of rhubarb that's in it. And then it's got a streusel-y topping on it. And so it's really good. It's more, I would say it's more coffee cake-ish.
Okay.
Partly because it's delicious with coffee and partly because that's more the texture and style of the cake that it is.
Okay, it sounds really good.
You could pick it up and eat it. You know, you wouldn't have to have a fork and a plate.
Yeah, I love strawberry rhubarb pie.
Oh my gosh, so that's tell me time. How you do it.
I just make pie crust. I almost always use a shortening pie crust where you use Crisco and flour and an egg and a little bit of... apple cider vinegar. And then my neighbor, Georgia Schrode, is the one that taught me how to make it fluffy. Because if you read books like Rose Levy Bierenbaum, I know I'm saying her name wrong. Do you know how to say it right?
No.
Oh, so embarrassed. But she has a pastry Bible and it's good. But she makes it in a food processor. But mine is just always not turning out right in a food processor. And Georgia said that the reason was that you have to, when you are making pie crust, you have to cut the shortening in with two butter knives. She says it's even better than if you use the pastry.
The blender with all the little blades.
Blade thing. And then you have to fluff it with a fork. Don't use a big spoon. Don't use a giant fork. Just fluff it with a fork when you're adding the water. And I don't know why, but those two things just really changed my pie crust because it was pretty tough before.
And you always put an egg in it.
Yeah. You know, it's half an egg. So when I make pie crust, I know that sounds so silly, but I make enough for two covered pies. And then if I'm not making two pies, I just stick the other one in the freezer, and then it's just easier next time. And it's easier than measuring half an egg. So I think it's, okay, come on, brain. I think it's 4 cups of flour and 2 cups of Crisco, 2/3 of a cup of ice water, a tablespoon of apple cider vinegar and an egg, and I mix the egg and the ice water and the vinegar together. I hope that's right. You know what?
I'll put it on the website.
I'll put it on the website.
And I think the basic pastry that I use, which is just Julia Child's recipe, with a little bit of change in terms of the ratio of butter to shortening, is, I think it's already up there. I'll double
okay.
check.
Oh,
but
okay.
yeah, yeah. Because your pies are fabulous.
No,
seriously.
I bow down to you.
No. No, I am a novice when it comes to pies because I didn't start making pies until I had to.
Well, when you said Julia Child, I realized I actually kind of think of Georgia Schroeder and Julia Child together.
Oh.
She's such a good cook.
That's
so
great.
Another thing that she taught me that I really like is to put two pieces of plastic wrap down on the counter. So they kind of make one big giant piece or a wide piece of plastic wrap. And then to roll the pie crust out on that. Oh, and then you put two pieces of plastic on top of it so that it is in between plastic. So you're not adding a lot of flour to it. But also, once you get it all rolled out how you want, and you can lift up the plastic and feel where it's thick and where it isn't, just like you do with regular rolling out a pie crust. But when you take that top layer of plastic off, I hope I'm explaining this so you can envision it, then you can take the bottom plastic and just lift up the pie crust rather than, because that's the thing with the shortening pie crust. It's so tender.
It is. You can't fold it.
Right. You can't. It's so hard to get into the pie pan. And so you lift up the pieces of plastic, and then it lends so much strength to the wet pie crust, and then you can just flip it over into the pie pan, and then the plastic is still on it, and you can shape it and get it all in the nooks and crannies like it needs to be, and then you just peel the plastic off. And Georgia taught me that, and boy, that just makes it, for me, it makes it go a lot faster. You know, I put a little flour on the plastic so it comes off easy, but I don't use anywhere near as much flour, and I swear a lot less because of the transferring thing.
Well, you're making, how many pies do you think you make a year?
I make a lot because you know that I do the pies for
right.
the animal shelter bake sale. So we make 100 pies for that. And then other pies. I don't think I make 200 pies a year, but I bet I make 130.
Wow.
So
tell me about the rhubarb. Strawberry rhubarb part.
So I like a little cinnamon with strawberry rhubarb. And so it's, you know, like any pie filling, it's so easy. It's just strawberry and rhubarb's just pretty much half and half. Sugar, I don't use a lot. I bet I use half a cup, but it's just I like my pie not super sweet, even though that might sound really sweet. Most recipes will call for a cup.
Yes.
And then I put some cinnamon in there. And so really simple. For a thickener, there's this stuff. Do you use it, the instant clear gel?
No.
It's kind of expensive, so I use it for the pies that I have at home. But what I like about it is... okay, so you put the sugar with the rhubarb and the strawberries leak out a bunch of juice. They macerate. And then the instant clear gel is a thickener that really doesn't have any taste. But also what it does is it doesn't require heat for thickening. So you mix it. See now? now I'm just like saying things wrong. I mix it in with the sugar. And the reason I do that is because if you just put it in straight, sometimes it can be lumpy. So I was thinking I put it in after, but I don't. So I mix it in with the sugar, about 3 tablespoons per pie. And then it thickens right away. You can see how thick the pie is going to be before you even put the filling in there.
It's a powder?
I think it's made of rice, but yeah, it's a powder.
It's a rice powder.
I think
okay.
it's rice. But yeah, I just, it's a product that I really like.
Yeah.
And otherwise I use cornstarch, and the thing with cornstarch is you just have to make sure when you're making a pie that's thickened with cornstarch that the fruit is bubbling before you take it out of the oven, because it's the boiling that makes the cornstarch thicken.
Yeah.
The temperature.
I guess I default to flour.
Yeah.
I almost always use flour.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I just do.
And I don't even know why I got away from it. In my brain, I thought I could taste it, but I think that I'm, like, maybe had a dream about being a picky person.
That's a nightmare. Well, so are you doing a double crust pie when you do your strawberry rhubarb, or are you doing...
Yeah, that's how I like it.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes lattices, because it's so pretty in red
pies.
It's
so pretty.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I've been seeing really pretty lattices where they'll have like one thick piece and then one really thin piece and one
yeah,
really thick piece.
I've
so they
kind
of look tart and platty. And I think those are really pretty.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
Yeah, and I love an egg wash on any top crust, just where you can use a whole egg or the egg white. And I think it's really pretty when you... you mix it with a tablespoon of cream or a tablespoon of milk or half and half. I like that egg and dairy combination. I think that's the prettiest. And then you just brush it on. And then I like big crusty, you know, there's like a sanding sugar.
Yes.
At kingarthur.com, but maybe other places. But where it's a white crystal, it's not that turbinado crystal, but a big, pretty crystal. It's like little diamonds on the pie. And I think more than the flavor of my pies, I get more comments about that sugar. So that's something that I do.
Yum.
How about you?
I don't do a strawberry rhubarb pie. I do a rhubarb pie sometimes. I guess I've mixed rhubarb with almost everything but strawberries, okay. And I'm not sure why.
Probably because it's so cliche.
Well, no, I love strawberry rhubarb pie. I guess, you know, I tend to... just at home anyway, I tend to hold off on strawberries until the hood berries come in, which is usually like the end of June or something. Yeah, I mean, it depends on the year we're having, but it's very late. And often the rhubarb is waning when the strawberries finally come in.
What are those strawberries? My brain's so small, I was not prepared. So I always get it confused with the Shawshank Redemption. It's, what are they, Shuxton, something really close
know.
To that. I think they're as good as the hoods. And you know how the hoods don't freeze? They just turn to...
Yeah.
Well, this kind freezes really good. Is it Shuxton?
And they're Oregon berries?
Yes, Shuxton. You know that guy that sells berries out by...
Yeah. Schwab's.
Putnam Probably.
Yeah.
He'll have them. And but there's other places in the valley that always have them. Shuxton, it's so close to that. Shuxton. Oh, so small, my brain.
Well, we'll Google strawberries SH and we'll find them.
The actual word. You know that stuff that does that thing? So sorry.
Oh my gosh. I'm trying to think of, it seems like I had so much asparagus stuff in my brain before I got here.
Yeah. It's just such a simple thing. Just, also, you know, like the cornerstones of Chinese cooking are chilies and garlic and ginger. And just if you have a bunch of asparagus and you just chop it up and you put a little bit of oil in any kind of pan, a wok, anything, and get it hot and put in some ginger and some garlic and chili pepper that's minced really fine if you like heat, and then put in the asparagus and just stir fry it. Man, that's good. And you can put herbs when you're all done, you know, basil or cilantro, even mint, and that is just so good and so, like, much better than the effort, if that makes sense, you know? Just
out of all proportion to how easy it is.
Exactly. Yeah. How did I do that in that amount of time is kind of when you're, you know, trying to eat with one hand and pat yourself on the back with the other.
Well, I want to remind you that you can find recipes we've been talking about today and much more at northcoastfoodweb.org. And that would also be the place to contact us. If you have something that you'd like us to talk about, or you have questions about something you're cooking at home and you are wondering what especially Linda is thinking about it, you can email us at northcoastfoodweb.org, and we will absolutely address that on the very next show. We're here on the first and third Mondays, and we would love to hear from you.
I like so much that you think I'm a thinking person.
You've got us all fooled, Linda. Seriously. Seriously. I wonder what we're going to do next time now.
We'll have to think about that. I don't know, because there's so much in the spring.
I know, there's so much, but it's too early for a whole lot of berries, and although there's some blueberries, early blueberries starting to come on, and it's too early for stone fruits. We have to think. We'll think.
Okay.
We'll be thinking. Or if you have suggestions out there, you can let us know. I want to remind you that coming up at 1 minute after the hours, you're going to have NPR News headlines. And then John Stevenson is in the house to bring you Lost Highways at 6 after the hour. A couple of hours of fabulous music to kick your morning off in good stead. Thanks, Linda, so much.
And one not related thing, but it's kind of cooking. There are a lot of hummingbirds in Astoria. Get yourself a feeder. Get yourself a pot. Put 1 cup of sugar and 4 cups of water in there, or just anything. 1 to 4. Don't make it richer. It's not good for the birds. Do 1 part sugar to 4 parts water. Boil it, cool it, put it in the feeder, and get yourself some hummingbirds.
Oh, my gosh. Droves of hummingbirds.
Yeah, yeah. They migrate through, and this is when they come. Go get a feeder.
They're fabulous. We have them. We have room for 6 to eat, and we have them waiting in line, not very patiently.
Belly up to the buffet at Marianne's house.
They're big bullies, actually.
They are.
They're just like little buzz moms, and they're so rude to each other, and even rude to my husband, who is the one who feeds them, but they're so annoyed when he comes out and takes the feeders in to clean them and refill them. They're just like, get away, get away. All right, so that means feed everything in your world. Feed everything. Come from the place.